New York. My name is Arthur Schwartz. You may know me as an activist attorney or as a founder of the New York Progressive Action Network or as counsel for Occupy Wall Street, Black Lives Matter, and Bernie Sanders. I'm proud to announce my latest foray into activism as the host of a program on WBAI. The show is called Advocating for Justice. It airs every Monday from 5 to 6 p.m. Each week, we'll talk to activists who are successfully employing strategies which address the challenges we are facing in a post-Trump and post-Hillary world. Again, that's Advocating for Justice, Mondays at 5 p.m. here on WBAI 99.5 FM. It will be movement-building time on the radio.
WBAI New York, there is a war on the workers. We'll revisit that a little bit later, probably at the end of this hour. WBAI New York, coming up next, It's a Good Day.
Ah, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good.
Good morning. It's 7:02. You're listening to non-corporate, listener-funded community control, WBAI New York at 99.5 FM on the dial, streaming globally at WBAI.org. I'm Johanna Fernandez, your host of It's a Good Day from 7 to 8 a.m. Here with Autumn Harris. Stay with us for the autumn weather and traffic report.
Shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new
This is WBAI in New York. I'm Autumn Harris with your morning weather report. As of 7 a.m., it's 41 degrees with feels in the mid-30s, a mostly cloudy day today, and it may rain some, so bring an umbrella. And for all the bodega owners, you may want to start laying out the cardboard boxes. Welcoming in the Monday morning, you can expect all good service on all trains and all major bridges and tunnels are running regularly, but due to roadways, motorists are being asked to drive at reduced speeds. And as always, we urge you to check the MTA's website for planned service changes. Back to you, Johanna.
Good morning, Autumn. It's 7:04, and why should the bodegueros pull out the cardboard boxes?
Because it may rain this morning. So, you know, they don't use, like, floor mats. It's just the bodega boxes. And you lay it down, and it's nice.
In the bodega.
In the entrance, right.
Oh, so people don't slip and fall.
Yeah, and you're also reducing and reusing, you know, cardboard. Not reducing, but reusing. And that's important.
I hear you, girl. I hear you. Okay, it's 7:04, everyone. Get ready for the day. I hope you're not hitting that snooze button as I did all morning long today.
Oh, no. Wake up, wake up. It's February 3rd. This is the first Monday of February.
And it's Black History Month.
Oh, right. We just slid on into February, Black History Month. That's really good. Well, yeah, we're excited.
We're excited. We're going to bring you some news.
What's going on?
So we are doing something special for Black History Month, which is that we're going to bring you this day in Black History Month someday in the past. So we have today the murder of Samuel Young, February 3rd, 1966. 21-year-old Samuel Young Jr. was murdered. Young was killed by a white racist in Macon County, Alabama, for using a whites-only bathroom. Young entered the Navy in 1962 after high school and spent time on the aircraft carrier USS Independence, a warship involved in the blockade of Cuba. While in the Navy, Young lost a kidney. After his service in the Navy, Young entered Tuskegee Institute and became active in the struggle for voting rights. At Tuskegee, he joined a student organization aligned with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. 4 days after the murder, SNCC put out a statement condemning Young's murder, linking it to the United States' racist Vietnam War. The SNCC statement asked, quote, "Where is the draft for the freedom fight in the United States," unquote. I think it's important for our listening audience to remember that the civil rights movement, which emerges immediately after World War II, begins in part because of the actions of returning soldiers from World War II, who began to initiate campaigns in the South because they experienced some kind of freedom in the war. African American soldiers fought alongside of French soldiers because the U.S. military was segregated, and they were treated with dignity by the French. And when they returned to the United States, they were not willing to accept the indignity of white supremacy. So they joined the movement and they started organizing citizenship classes that taught Black Southerners how to read and write and the Constitution, which was necessary to register to vote. So the civil rights movement begins in part with the actions and organizing efforts of Black soldiers returning home from war after World War II.
That's, wow. We need to talk about that a little bit more. We might revisit that. Well, staff writer for Common Dreams, Andrea Germanos, writes that the New York Times endorsement of Klobuchar and Warren for president has caused a firestorm of criticism among activists. The newspaper's endorsement of both Warren and Klobuchar, said one critic, reveals so much about the liberal reaction to a resurgent left, a reaction that holds Trump as an aberration and polite, well-mannered centrism as the greatest virtue. Bill McKibben, an environmentalist and founder of 350.org, said, "If I were going to go all weak-kneed like the New York Times, I'm not sure I would have picked the day devoted to our most clear-eyed moral leader to do it." Here, McKibben is referring to the fact that the announcement was made on MLK Junior Day. "It is always worth remembering," McKibben added, "that the New York Times editorial board slammed MLK Junior when he came out against the Vietnam War. Progressive journalist Sarah Lazar, the web editor for In These Times, suggested the endorsement itself, which she described as a love letter to capitalism and war, reveals more about the newspaper than the two candidates it chose to back."
Yowza. Now, news on impeachment. With the Senate expected to acquit the president, historian John Meacham said on NBC January 31st that POTUS quote, is functionally a monarch at this point, unquote. In a segment first flagged by Newsbusters, Meacham said during NBC News' impeachment trial coverage that, quote, Donald Trump may well have now become the most powerful president in American history. He has such a standing with his political base, unquote, Meacham continued, that senior United States senators have decided that though he is guilty, they are not going to risk the wrath of the people in order to follow through on what is clearly spelled out in the Constitution, unquote. Meacham was referring to the Senate's decision not to call witnesses or marshal evidence in what was clearly a show trial. Meacham went on to say, quote, the example going forward is fraud. President Trump is functionally a monarch at this point. If the king does it, it's okay. That's what we're seeing unfold in Washington right now. And I think all Americans, whether you support the president or you don't, should pause significantly and think about the long-term implications of having a president who is above the law, unquote. I think that all presidents in the United States have been somewhat above the law and have broken the law. But part of what's outrageous about this is that this is all being done transparently. There's no attempt to pretend that the law is being followed. And I've been talking to Ajamu Sankofa about this, who's the person who's curating our news every day, and what emerges is the absolute fraud of the situation. There has never before in American history been a moment when there has been no evidence or witnesses brought forth in a trial ever. The only time this has happened in the United States has been in the white supremacist Jim Crow South. And that happened regularly in the South under Jim Crow. But now it's the rule, it's the way things are being conducted at the national level. So
democracy was fun while it lasted, I guess.
Well, have we ever had democracy is the question.
That's the question.
So that's the news for today.
Yeah, hopefully we didn't ruin your day today, but it's 7:12 a.m. This is WBAI in New York. Let's listen to some Dolly Parton, 9 to 5,
yeah,
while you
ready
get
for
ready
work.
For your 9 to 5. Let's go.
The slave, as Malcolm X called it, the job.
And I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living. Barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. They just use your mind. To watch him shatter, you're just a step on the boss man's ladder, but you got dreams he'll never take away. On the same boat with a lot of your friends, waiting for the day your ship will come in, and the tide's gonna turn, and it's all gonna roll your way. Working 9 to 5. Where they want you, there's a
morning. Good morning, WBAI. It's 7:15. You're listening to non-commercial, listener-funded, community-controlled WBAI New York at 99.5 FM on the dial, streaming globally at WBAI.org. I'm Johanna Fernandez, your host of It's a Good Day, from 7 to 8 a.m. with Autumn Harris, our production assistant. Autumn, what do we have?
Well, it's Monday morning, and it's fundraising month. We also doubled February as fundraising for WBAI. Most recently, you guys probably have heard that
we doubled?
Doubled, like, the month as not only being Black History Month.
Oh, okay, I see. No, we didn't double fundraising. We need to double our buddies and the like.
Absolutely.
So we're doubling as fundraising and Black History.
Yes, thank you for clearing that up. And I was getting ready to say something, but I forgot. Well, we've been mentioning curated news lately, and I don't think we got a chance to really explain, like, what that is, well, the power of curated news. We've been broadening our team. Johanna mentioned Ajamu Sankofa, who's our news producer, and curated news means that we tailor the subject and topics of our news with the story that we're gonna tell later on that in the hour. And I mean, we're just growing, and why not donate to, you know, the morning show? It's a good day, WBAI, so that we can stay on the air and give you the truth, the news that you want to hear without all the added endorsements and advertisements and commercials. What's on your mind, Johanna?
Well, we want folks to definitely support this show, and we want you to go to WBAI.org and say that you want to become a buddy and identify It's a Good Day as the show you want to support. You can also call 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. Folks, we want to, by the end of this fundraising season, claim 66 buddies. 66. I don't know where I got that number from, but 66 sounds like a good number.
Yeah.
We need your support. You know that something crazy is going to happen in the country. There's going to be a crisis in the country or in the world. That crisis is around the corner. And you're going to tune into WBAI because WBAI is going to give you the real deal.
Right.
Is going to offer you an analysis that identifies the root causes and the real culprits and that puts a way forward. That's what we aim to do here at It's a Good Day. As Autumn mentioned, we are growing our production team. We're meeting every week on Thursday to talk about what we want to bring to you. Day in and day out. And we have exciting news about some of the folks we're going to bring to you.
What, tomorrow? The day after? The day after?
Soon. Who did you talk to yesterday, Autumn?
Oh, is it too early? Fine. We'll just do this. Yeah, so we're in talks with Roger Toussaint. And if you know, you know. That is, he was the TWU Local 100 president who launched the 2005 MTA transit strike that shook and also, like, paralyzed the city. So we're going to bring him on, get his account, and we want to tell that story because, you know, I was, 7 years old when that happened. I just remember hearing stories. I don't really know what was going on. I was sipping on my bottle, playing with my Legos, like, okay, 7 is a little old for that, but judge me. We also have this dope website, givetowbai.org, which has, like, a whole bunch of logo items. You can become an ambassador of the city, and that'll be your donation when you buy a tote, a t-shirt, a sweater, a bumper sticker, all types of things. So
you should go to give2wbai.org, give2wbai.org, or call 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602. So we're bringing to you Roger Toussaint. Why? Because there are all of these demonstrations happening right now, the FTP demonstrations around the subway and what's going on in the subway, but there's a long history of struggle in this country in the subway, and it started most recently in 2005 when, for the first time in a long time since 1966, the folks who take us to work in the subway went out on strike. There have been three strikes in New York City. I don't remember the first one, but the second 66. One is 1966.
I think the first one was 66.
Oh, the first one was 1980 something. Anyway, the first strike of workers, TWU workers, the folks who operate the trains, was in 1966. The second one was sometime in the 1980s, and then the most recent was in 2005. And we think that it's important for us to get a sense of what happened before, and hopefully the lessons of struggle of 2005 will inform the new activists who are launching a struggle in the subway in this period. For that reason, we decided to bring Roger Toussaint. He's going to join us. So we're telling you this because this is the kind of programming that we want to continue to offer you. And we had a debate about whether to bring Roger Toussaint on, who was the president of TWU Local 100, or rank and filers, because there is a difference between the union bureaucracy and the workers. And so the question is, does the union bureaucracy actually uphold the highest interests of the working class? This is a question that we are going to pose to Mr. Roger Toussaint. Now, we decided to invite him because the man did get arrested. The man did get arrested. He spent 2 weeks in prison. And we want to hear his story, as Autumn said. We also have tomorrow coming to you Clarence Taylor, who's the author of Fight the Power, A History of the Police in New York City. He is a professor emeritus at Baruch College, and in fact, my colleague, historian. He's coming in studio tomorrow to talk about the history of police brutality in New York City. Please support the show, 516-620-3602, 516-620-3602, or go online, give the number 2WBAI.org, give the number 2@WBAI.org. We want to reach 66 buddies.
And with that, we're going to play some music. You're not, don't worry, you won't have to hear me sing it.
This is a favorite.
Yeah. This is, oh my gosh, I'm blanking on the name, Johanna, help me, I'm drowning.
Chapman.
Tracy Chapman.
Talking about a revolution.
Donate now.
Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Don't you know? Talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's theirs? Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds whisper.
Last Friday, more than 1,000 people flooded Grand Central Terminal and the city's subways, demanding an end to the over-policing of New York's transit system.
This was the third in a series of FTP mass demonstrations. The actions followed after videos of NYPD arrested churro vendors went viral. Videos were also shown drawing guns of young people suspected of hopping turnstiles.
This comes after Governor Cuomo's quality of life campaign. Cuomo's appointed board members voted to install 500 new MTA police officers in the transit system at a cost of $249 million over the next 4 years.
And New York Attorney General's Letitia James launched an investigation on whether the NYPD's fare evasion enforcement is racially targeted. It found that between October 2017 and June 2019, Black and Hispanic New Yorkers represented almost 70% of all civil summonses and nearly 90% of arrests for fare evasion on the subway.
The FTP demonstrations are in collaboration with Decolonize the Space, Why Accountability, and Take Back the Bronx, to name a few organizations.
We should note that FTP stands for a number of movements. There's Feed the People, Fight the Power, Feel the Power, F the Pipelines, F the Prisons, Free the Prisoners, F the Process, Free the People, and of course, F the Police.
So we wanted to make that clear that FTP stands for many things. And we're here with, we are very happy to report, Delasia Foreman. Delasia Foreman is a member of Decolonize This Place. She is a community organizer, curator, cultural worker, and first-generation Caribbean Brooklynite. Her work focuses on political education, social justice, and empowerment through community preservation. She is a co-founder of Black Folk New York, a Black aesthetic collective.
And we're also joined by Shalene Rodriguez from Take Back the Bronx. She's a Bronx-based artist, educator, writer, and community organizer. And she uses text, drawing, painting, collage, and sculpture to explore strategies of survival. Her work has been exhibited at El Museo del Barrio, Queens Museum, New Museum. And recently, she's been commissioned by the City of New York for a permanent public sculpture, which will also serve as a monument to the people of the Bronx. So we're really happy to have our guests on air. Hello. Welcome. Good morning. Hello. It's a good day.
Good morning, fierce people. How are you?
Making do.
Well, we're going to start off with both of you, but Shalene, I want to hear from you first. What's your assessment of last Friday's actions? What happened? What did you see? Take us there.
Well, it started really early. I woke up to reports that there was already, by 7 a.m., people doing massive banner drops, at the Oculus, down in Wall Street. People really galvanized around the idea of an all-day diversity of tactics and actions in New York City. So it was easy to get out of bed and join the Bronx contingent who launched their own massive actions to join FTP, which I can talk about a little bit later. But my assessment is it was an incredible day of, people really joining in solidarity. That's from anything from, grandmas hanging the banners outside their windows that say FTP, people, putting bike locks on emergency doors so you can't get them open, so you can't get them closed.
Anyone else?
Or no, Delasia. Delasia, we want to hear from you. Yeah. What did you see? Take us there. Report back to us.
So earlier there was an action that happened in the Bronx that was really successful. We did a procession. First, we started that with criminal court, trying to just let folks know this was happening, particularly because I'm sure many of those people were in court because of fare evasion, potentially, or a series of fare evasion charges. Then we did a procession to what's known as the quote-unquote Joker Stairs, which before that movie were just stairs in a Black and brown working-class community. which are now being used as a tourist site, in which folks very much like a zoo come to a working class and poor neighborhood, post up and take photos, and leave. Some people like don't even, you know, they get out their cab for 5 minutes, take the photos and dip, right? So our communities are still being very much placed as places that are violent, even within the context of being like having our cultural spaces extracted. So that happened. It was a pretty successful action. Later on in the day, I can't speak to the rest of the action because within about 10 minutes into the action, a comrade and I were very clearly pinpointed by the NYPD and body slammed, and then arrested, which I don't know if we want to speak to now, but yeah, I can speak to that.
Can you give us a sense of how many folks were arrested and what did police repression look like during these protests?
I can't point out. So the official tally was 47 arrests.
And we're listening to, just before you continue, this is, it's 7:31. We're listening to the voice of Shalene Rodriguez of Take Back the Bronx. And this is WBAI 99.5 FM on the dial. I'm Johanna Fernandez here with Autumn Harris. We're getting a report back of the FTP demonstrations that happened this Friday. Go ahead, Shalene.
The official tally was 47 arrested. What was the second half of your question?
What did police repression look like? We did see here videos of the police being really aggressive as DeLasia started to say, and I want to hear more. We want to hear more about that arrest and your experience, DeLasia. But were there patterns that were observed in terms
Absolutely.
Of how the police dealt with the demonstrators?
Absolutely. There are two things that can be pointed out quite clearly. The first is that they were using the premise of people obscuring their faces to snatch people out and arrest. The second was they were targeting Black people and brown people. I myself witnessed at least 5 to 6 arrests where NYPD did like what was like a charge, where they would charge through the crowd and grab the one Black person in the group to arrest them. And I think that the message, which they were trying to send very loud and clear, was, don't y'all Black people think you're going to do what these white activists are doing to get your freedom, because we will target you. And they did. They did. They would charge through the crowd and grab young Black activists, young Black protesters, and arrest them specifically.
So I want to hear from you, DeLasia. Talk to me about, you know, what's the significance of Grand Central Terminal as the place to begin the demonstrations? I know, you know, each borough and each community had their own kind of pregame, but why Grand Central Terminal?
Well, I'd say that Grand Central Terminal is a good spot because it's more or less one of the hearts of the MTA system, right? It's a place that already has, on a regular day, hyper-militarized police presence, in which the rest of these increases in police presence in subway systems or around the subway system are essentially kind of following that model that has the precedent that has been set. And it's the same thing with Penn Station. But I think that Grand Central is a bit more intense with, like, police have AK-47s, and you feel like you're in a military state in Grand Central Terminal. And because it's the heart, not only with the militarized police presence, but when you look at how the subway system is designed, it's a place where you can actually spread out very, very much around the whole MTA system. So it was a good starting point because there are a lot of options for people to engage in a multiple of ways, which I think was one of the main points of the way this action was designed. It's not necessary all the time for us to only think about marches as a space of dissent. But how do we kind of encapsulate dissent in our everyday. And I think the MTA is a perfect example of how we can do that. So.
It seems that part of what you accomplished was that you paralyzed one of the key arteries of New York City. And folks who are trying to leave the city probably to the suburbs at the end of the day on Friday. Can you give us a sense of how many people showed up to protest alongside of you? And give us a sense of the different sites of protest. I know that the gathering point was Grand Central Station, but then protests fanned out to different places in the city.
Right. First, if I could speak to that really quickly.
Shalene.
Yeah. Absolutely, Joanna. The idea was to sort of clog the artery. So Grand Central Station really was a good place to get started. The thing about this action that was different from FTP 1 and FTP 2 is that it was not designed to be a march, as Delasia stated. It was designed, the journey was the action. So people wove in and out of the transit system, which is the site that we are contesting, to like display their exhibitions of resistance. We are we are estimating about 1,500 people, but it's really hard to tell because it could be a lot more. But because it wasn't like a monolithic moving through the city, that tally is really hard to make because people really took it upon themselves, and there were many contingents fanned out throughout the city. People went west to Times Square, people went into Brooklyn, people went uptown. There were simultaneous actions in Corona, Queens, in different places across the city. So it was really a guerrilla type of action, series of actions.
It's 7:37 a.m. You just heard Shalene Rodriguez from Take Back the Bronx. She's a Bronx-based artist, educator, writer, and community organizer. And we're also joined by Delasia Foreman from Decolonize This Place. She's also a community organizer, curator, cultural worker, and first-generation Caribbean Brooklynite. I love it. Before we open it up to our listeners, because we want to hear from you, were you there? Were you, you know, part of the movement advocating for folks who ride the subway? We want to hear from you. Call in about 5 minutes, maybe 7:45, at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. We want to talk to our listener warriors.
I wonder if Delasia wanted to add anything to Shalene's assessment?
Definitely. So, as I said, unfortunately, my comrade and I, who were arrested, only were at the action for a total of 10 minutes because we were very clearly targeted. As unfortunately, in where we were the only two Black people in the section of the march, and the cops literally beelined through a group of people doing the same things we were doing, holding banners with their faces obscured. A group of, like, white people, and I really can't stress how much this was a beeline of through maybe about 100 people to exclusively get to us, because we were very intentional about being closer to the center as opposed to the outskirts where the police are, right? Came for us, took us from behind without any warning, no words, nothing, and threw us on the ground. Next thing I knew, I had 200-pound men on my back. 200-pound white men on my back.
And this is interesting because NYPD reported that no injuries were known. And so to hear your account kind of just underscores.
That's
go ahead.
Definitely not true. Sorry. But as I said, like, I'm probably 120 pounds wet. I'm very small. And then a comrade that got arrested with me had at some point at least like 5 to 6 officers on his body. With that being said, we were then taken to an MTA bus where we were told, there were 3 of us who are non-white people, 2 Black people, one person who was Dominican. We were the only 3 non-white people on this bus, of people being quote-unquote processed. We were told we were going to get summonses in the bus and we would be let go. However, what happened instead was when they turned on the bus, which we heard it was supposed to be going to Jamaica, they separated the three non-white people, took us back into the station to be processed, and from what I hear, left with all of the young white students who were on the bus with us to Jamaica, in which they ended up being processed faster than we were, which probably means that they weren't mugshotted or fingerprinted or anything, right? They're probably just given papers and told to go, and their punishment was that they have to find their way home from Jamaica. Whereas we were held for 5 hours. The person that was with us, the Dominican person that was with us, didn't even make it into Grand Central Station. The police smashed his face into the glass, and he had to get stitches before he even made it into the station. They banged his head into glass on the way in. It was very clear that the attempt, as Chalene said, was to ensure that black and brown folks do not feel comfortable dissenting. It was very clear that the idea was to visually whiten this movement so it would also defer other black and brown working class people from even getting involved, because then it creates a visual space that it's not for us. And this is something that is done throughout all white supremacist institutions. I mean, from museums to like anything, all of it, right? So it's not surprising that they use the same tactics, but it was really jarring to see how blatant they were. And just like being held for 5 hours, I was held in handcuffs for 5 hours simply because I didn't want them to cut off my waist piece. So because of that, that was my punishment. I had to be held in a cell for 5 hours with handcuffs on that were too tight, in which I have bruises all over my wrist.
You're listening to the voice of Delasia Foreman, who's one of the organizers of the FTP3 demonstrations of last Friday. This is non-commercial, listener-funded community control, WBAI New York at 99.5 FM. I'm Johanna Fernandez. This is a really important conversation, Delasia. Chalene Rodriguez is also on the line with us from Bronx Fight Back, or Fight Back in the Bronx? Take Back the Bronx. This is important because historically, the police, but the ruling class in general, has used race to divide movements. And part of what's fascinating is that this movement around the train station and what's the stopping of young black and brown youth by police in the subway, but also the notion that the subway should be free. It's an incredibly multiracial and multi-ethnic movement. And yes, the cops want to make sure, and not just the cops, but also the establishment in the city want to make sure that other working class young people of color see these demonstrations as a threat to their freedom and their livelihood, and that they don't join in. But it's also an attempt to divide the black organizers and the black protesters from the white protesters. So have you thought about how you might in the future counteract this strategy on the part of the police?
You can take
that.
I think that's something that, you know, we are constantly trying to work through, you know, because ideologically we sometimes differ on how those things are, on how those things are approached. But what the truth of the matter is that the people that are bearing the brunt of this violence are the poor and working class New Yorkers of the city, and it's the hardest for them to mobilize. And that's in conjunction with a college town, which New York has become increasingly. So there are a lot of white transient folks that are in the city, but also black and brown transient folks who are in the city who are getting politicized for the first time and who want to do something. So what we get when we're able to amplify and call together people to do something is a mix of a diverse amount of massive amount of students from all of the universities, from CUNY to NYU to, you know, and it's also a lot more black and brown than it's painted in the media. And that's on purpose.
We're listening to the voices of Shalene Rodriguez and Delasia Foreman, organizers of the FTP3 protests of last Friday. And this is a very important conversation, because when we talk about social movements, we identify what's the social base. Who are the people who are affected, and who are the people who are fighting, who are leading these movements? And there are a cross-section of folks. It appears that working class black and brown folk are involved in protests and leading, but we also have probably a cohort of middle class white former students and students who are part of these protests. It appears that the police is trying to divide these groups, but also keep people of color in the city, black and brown youth, from entering the protest. We have a caller, which we want to take at 7:46. This is WBAI. I'm Johanna Fernandez here with Autumn Harris. Caller, you're on the line. Tell us your question and where you're calling from.
Yes, I'm calling from Brooklyn. I have two points. One is about you having later on Toussaint from the Transit Workers Union, and I'm wondering how you can reconcile Transit Workers Union, who and most of their causes, they need more money and more benefits, with these people who are trying to defraud the trans and have them have less money. And my second point is that if this is true, that black people were targeted, I think that is very wrong. I think that white people who are involved in this should also have their heads smashed against the glass.
Okay. Delasia, do you want to take this on? So,
and sure. Let me just clarify. Toussaint will be in on. Excuse me, we're not talking to him today. We're going to talk to him another time. But we'll store that for next week, our conversation, or this week, whenever he comes on. But Delasia, go for it. Your response.
I'd like to start by saying that we were very clear with our communiques, because this is part of a movement, right? This is part of not only a physical movement of bodies, but an ideological movement. With one of our communiques, we were very specific to be in solidarity with MTA workers, because part of this increased militarization of the MTA system, and I have a parent who works for the MTA, so this is very personal for me as well. Part of this militarization is the fact that this hyper-surveillance of the Omni system means they're cutting MTA jobs, right? Hmm. So don't be mad at us. Be mad at the MTA for undermining workers by saying we're going to replace you with these machines. These machines, which coincidentally are also named Omni, and Omni is the name of the technology that fingerprints you when you're being arrested, I learned. So that's not a coincidence, right? This is like a very clear, hyper-militarized, hyper-surveilled attempt to undermine workers, undermine poor and working class black and brown people, of which many MTA workers are, because a lot of MTA workers are working class brown, black and brown folks, working class folks in New York, who are also under attack. So these movements are not separate. And we've made attempts and will continue to do so. And perhaps there are ways in which we can work better with MTA workers to ensure that we're all part of this conversation, because what we're looking for is the liberation of working class and poor people.
Thank you, Delasia.
You're an MTA worker or not.
Thank you, Delasia. No, and might I even add, no one deserves their head smashed into glass. I mean, this is the one time that I will say, like, all lives matter. We have another caller on the line. Let's hear from them. Caller, what's your name? Where are you from?
Yeah, hi. My name is Ian. I'm calling from Astoria.
Hi, Ian from Astoria. Talk to us.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that a lot of the crime that's committed in the subway is from people who jump the turnstile and not people who pay their way. You know, so, you know, people, they complain about militarization of the transit system. But just ask anybody who's been mugged or assaulted on the subway whether or not it would be better if there were more cops looking out for scoundrels on the system.
All right,
and,
Ian.
And who the heck is going to pay for all this free stuff that everybody wants? Everybody wants free education and free sober rights. Who the hell is going to pay for all of this stuff?
All right, Ian.
Oh, boy.
All right, Shalene, you want to tackle this?
Sure, I'd love to tackle that. As a scoundrel, I would like to. the MTA budget, 20% of the MTA budget goes to Wall Street.
Shalene, can you speak directly into the mic?
Sure, can you hear me?
Yes.
Is that better?
Yes.
As I was saying, Joanna, as a self-identified scoundrel, that 20% of the MTA budget goes directly to Wall Street's pocket. People hop the train because they can't afford $6 a day to go and come back. We have a serious problem in this city of there are no jobs. The jobs that are available are severely inadequate.
One more time, Shalene, the jobs that are available are severely inadequate.
Are severely inadequate.
We can hear you better now. Go ahead.
High rent. Oh, perfect. Okay. To pay these high rents. So I think that the gentleman from Astoria is a little bit off with his comment because you're looking in the wrong place, sir. We have a society that can afford to make free transit. Check out Kansas City, Missouri. We have a way to be able to have free universities and all these things. How about we start with decreasing the military budget? We have a police department that is militarized in a way that no police department is in the world. So maybe we're putting our money in the wrong place. And perhaps if we were to take care of people and take care of each other rather than commodifying things that should be human rights, then, people wouldn't have to hop the train. We wouldn't have to have these conversations about criminalizing black and brown, poor and working class people who built this city, by the way.
That's a good note.
Right.
It's 752 WBAI New York. We've got many callers. Caller, you're on the line. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
And briefly, because we have about 4 minutes and we've got to get as many calls in as possible. Talk to us.
Hi, good morning. Thomasina from Bergen County.
Hey, Thomasina.
Thomasina, we want you to make this right now. We know you can do it.
I'm from Astoria, so I got to make this right.
Please, bring it.
So I totally agree with the protester. I'm sorry, I don't remember her name, but... So I think the actions are great, and I think that that's what we need more of. You need to shut the subways down. That's what they're doing in France.
Woo!
And they get everything they want in France. They shut the subways down. Macron was going to cut their pension. They shut the subways down for a couple of days, and now he's not going to touch their pension.
What's your critique of New York's protests, if at all?
Yeah, so I think it's great, and they need to keep shutting the subways down. But I do have to say, as a rider of the subway for many years, it does need to be more safe. And that's part of the services that you're supposed to, like when you pay your $3, part of that is to provide safety. So they're taking our money and they're not providing safety. That is an issue. I'm not talking about people jumping the turnstiles. I'm just talking about like female harassment that I've had to put up with on the subways, for many years. And many women I know have had to put up with harassment on the subways, and there's nothing you can do when you're on a train and there's a guy rubbing up against you. It's done by then. There's nothing you can do. So the trains are too crowded, and that does create a safety issue. And so they just keep taking our money, and they don't provide better services, and that's an issue. But I do believe that we could have free subways. There's no doubt in my mind.
Excellent.
Thank you, Thomasina. Caller, you're on the line. Where you're calling from, and what's your name?
Hello
there. Yes, tell us your name. Short, you've got 30 seconds.
George from Jersey. Yeah, I want to sort of talk to those idiots that say, who's going to pay for all this free stuff? We're like back in the pyramid days where Bloomberg has cornered the free market. Bezos is the shipping god, And these idiots think that these people are worth $125 billion or even $1 billion. These idiots are giving we are back in the Stone Age, and America better wake up because we have lost our power, our freedoms, our democracy. Everything is sold, gone. Our environment is being sold off. Everything's being strip mined. Wake the hell up, people, before it's too late. It already probably is too late. I appreciate this, the striking going on. Let's keep it up and have a good day.
Thank you very much. From New Jersey.
Thank you.
Okay, Shalene and Delasia, we have 2 minutes left, 1.5 minutes each. Can you wrap this up for us? WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM on the dial. Go for it.
I'll just say one thing and then I'll hand it off to Delasia. To the lady that called from Astoria, you know, I think that we, the people, get to decide what safety looks like. And, you know, we shouldn't have police shoved down our throat as the only option. And, you know, that's an abolitionist perspective. How do we keep each other safe? Also, Mexico City has the first two carts of every train for women and women-identified folks only. Women and children and women-identified folks only. So, you know, perhaps that's something that New York City can start to implement.
Thank you. Thank you. Delasia.
I'd just like to say that despite all the violence that is forced onto our bodies by the state, I'm super proud of the movement that has been built from the legacy of since 1492 until today. And I'm looking forward to us continuing to build these movements and not only build them in spaces where there already is power, but more importantly, build them in our own communities. Because as Shalene said, if we don't create the infrastructure for what safety looks like for us, no one will do it for us. So I'm really excited to see what comes next. And I'm really excited to see how the creativity that already exists in working class and poor oppressed communities around the globe, but particularly in New York, can manifest for us to create alternatives that work for us.
We've been listening to the voices of Shalene Rodriguez and Delasia Foreman, organizers of the FTP protest that happened last Friday. You're listening to non-corporate, listener-funded, community-controlled WBAI New York at 99.5 FM on the dial, streaming globally at WBAI.org. This show is produced by Autumn Harris, Jürgen Ostensen, and Ajamu Sankofa. I'm your host, Johanna Fernandez. This is It's a Good Day. Thank you for tuning in. Our board operator is Michael G. Haskins. Thank you for being with us, fierce women. See you tomorrow.
Don't you know how talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying at the doorsteps of those armies of salvation, wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds dismal. Who are people gonna rise up and get their share? Who are people gonna rise up and take what's theirs? Don't you know you better. Those armies of salvation.